Check engine, ABS, or maintenance light on? Take the guesswork out of your warning lights with O'Reilly Veriscan. The service is free and provides a report with solutions verified by ASE-certified master technicians. And if you need help, we could recommend a shop for you. Ask for O'Reilly Veriscan today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Notre Dame, with a historic tradition of excellence, welcomes you to the Jack Swarbrick Show, where we pursue all things Notre Dame athletics.
The Jack Swarbrick Show is brought to you by
Team Notre Dame partner Spirit, Coke Zero, Under Armour, Gatorade, and is also sponsored by Xfinity. Now, the host of the Jack Swarbrick Show, Jack Nolan, on your home for Notre Dame football, 89 WLS.
Hello, Irish fans, and welcome to this week's edition of the Jack Swarbrick Show. I'm Jack Nolan. On this week's show, we'll talk with the first Notre Dame woman to win the NCAA Cross Country Championship, Molly Seidel. And later, we will sit down to talk with former Notre Dame basketball captain and now Notre Dame academic advisor, Torian Jones. Normal co-host Joe Schmidt is still wrapping up a few days of R&R after his outstanding performance in the Fiesta Bowl, which means Jack Swarbrick will also have to put up with me over the next hour. And Jack, I am honored to be filling in for Joe today.
Well, it's great to have you. And I got a theory that Joe saw the wind chill for today and decided to stay put. But we look forward to having him back. But it's great to be with you. And no one wears more hats around here than you do. And communicating all that's happening with Irish athletics. And we thank you for all you do.
Oh, thank you. It's a delight. It's become really a love, a professional love. And you mentioned the wind chill, and I know there are coaching staffs on this campus which are like, don't talk about the weather. Don't talk about the weather. But since you opened the door, let's talk about the fact that this campus now has so many terrific indoor facilities for virtually every sport that it really doesn't matter what the weather's like outside. There are plenty of places to train and play, even if there is a wind chill or lots of snow.
It is an occasional cold day, but no, that's right. I mean, I think we've continued to work on our facilities to make them better. It's there's always need for indoor space. Our operational choke point is the demands on our indoor space, but you know, teams work together cooperatively to figure out how to get it done. Our coaches schedule creatively in terms of away and home games and getting themselves into preseason tournaments for the spring sports and warm places. So, you know, I think far too much is made of it, frankly. I kid that you hear more about it from Notre Dame fans than I do from Michigan fans or Syracuse fans or Wisconsin fans, none of whom have better weather than we do.
Well, in particular, if you want to play in the NFL and you watch the playoffs, they were played in some pretty cold weather spots.
It's a real advantage.
And we haven't had, in all honesty, with El Nino, we've got like 4 inches of snow, and we didn't have any for Christmas, so it's overblown.
It's been easy.
But we are in the middle of the winter sports seasons, and certainly it's a monumental accomplishment. And when you look at the list of basketball coaches, both male and female, who have won 800 games, it's not a very long list, and our own Muffet McGraw just achieved that.
It is remarkable, and it is brought into context. Your introduction to that is so right by the other people on the list. When you take the 800 and the number of national championship appearances, you wind up with this incredibly small number that include, you know, the Krzyzewskis and the Smiths and some guy coaches at UConn, I forget his name. And it's elite company, Pat Summitt, to be part of. But she's such an elite coach, and what she has built with this program, the consistency, she demonstrates a quality that we see in so many of our coaches, that whatever occurs in the year, whatever the talent mix, whatever the strengths, she's going to maximize it. She's going to find a way. And she had some roster changes this year and some injury things to deal with, and Muffet has just found a way. And here we find ourselves, you know, in number three in the country with only one loss to you, number one, and playing really well.
I know ever since you got here, every coach you have hired, you have talked about the necessity to be a great teacher. Now, most folks know I'm the men's basketball radio announcer, so I go to the men's practices all the time, and I know what a great teaching staff that is. But last week I did a game on ESPN3 for the women, and Muffet let me go to practice, and I was really struck just by what a great teacher she was. I went to some of their practices back in the late 90s when I covered them in their first Final Four, but it hadn't stuck to me to the degree, and I think she's become, maybe this is why it stuck with me, an even better teacher throughout the entire practice.
Well, Muffet talks about that. She talks about her evolution as a coach. She talks about in her early years, Bobby Knight sort of being, you know, a standard for her. And over time, it's become a much more collaborative process between an educator and her students. And in fact, that's what you have to have today. Kids are different. They want to know why. They want to understand why they're doing it, especially the young women and men we attract to this university who are so bright. And so our best coaches very much engage. I'm sure when we talk to Molly in a little bit, she'll talk about her dynamic with her coach, about how they work together collaboratively to become national champions. And that's what it takes. But again, it's part of Muffet's brilliance that she's evolved over time in that way.
And, of course, I do all the men's games, and it's a really good men's team this year, but they haven't gotten the breaks. And quite honestly, they're missing a couple of great leaders that in crunch time, sometimes the leadership that was there last year hasn't been there completely this year. And I know that's something they continue to work on. Steve Astoria, who we've had on this show, was just named a captain by Coach Bragg.
Yeah, he was. And he'll be a great addition to that group. And it's probably the least understood team dynamic in collegiate sports is the leadership component. It is the difference between success and failure year to year, and it's not a static thing. I mean, we bring very bright kids here, and we put them through leadership programs, and we do all we can to prepare them, but you've got to do it. You've got to be in that situation, and it evolves in the course of a season. I think you'll see this leadership on this team get better and better and better. I always tell our coaches, and I think it's playing out right now, you are most at risk in leadership the year after you have great leadership.
What a great point that is.
And we had great, great leadership on that team last year, so it's going to take a little time because the underclassmen didn't have to take on any of the leadership mantle, and now they get it all. And you got to figure that out.
And leading is hard. I know Coach Bray has talked to me about players who have come to him and said, This is exhausting. It's 24/7 because you become a sort of coach on the same level with your players. And I'm glad you said that, because if you hadn't, I would have. They had such great leadership on last year's team that, you know, you can watch. It's like watching a great sporting event, and you think you can do it, and then you go and try to do it, and it's a totally different thing, and it's coming along. And your normal co-host, Joe Schmidt, certainly, and his production – I laughed with him sometimes because he seemed to be a magnet for criticism from some of the fans and whatnot. And his Fiesta Bowl performance, I mean, 13 tackles, a game-high 10 solo tackles. Not only did he have the skill, but his leadership just from an X and O and get guys riled up, follow me. Joe's one of the best leaders I've been around.
Oh, he is. I hope he doesn't see this broadcast because, you know, we don't want to compliment him. But he is an extraordinary leader. It'll serve him so well in the rest of his life. But you know, part of leadership, a big part of leadership in this context is setting the example. And Joe always set the example. No one ever worked harder at practice. No one was ever more on time, more focused. And, you know, for people who wanted to quibble with his performance, Joe was never going to say, I played this year with one arm, because he did. Those of us around the program knew that's what he was doing. His teammates knew that's what he was doing. But, you know, that's just what a good leader does. They don't focus on the things that are holding him back. They're just committed to a team victory.
Well, and a good leader does what Coach Kelly's sign on the wall says. You ignore the noise, which is, that's basically what it is. Talking about another team that's getting good leadership, another one of the winter sports, the Notre Dame hockey program, playing very good hockey, getting great goaltending, but they're getting great play from their lines as well.
They are. We had a great visit with Coach Jackson last week, and you know, we're approaching some sort of record for ties in a year, but playing very well. And as we've talked about on this show, when you can build off a great goaltender, and we have one, you know you're going to be in every game, and it brings a real focus. And you're seeing that with this team. There's no hills and valleys to speak of this year with this team. They've been very consistent and really positioning themselves for a long run, I think.
Now, I don't know if it's a reflection of the intelligence of athletic directors that this is the time of year where you have lots of meetings to go to, many of them in warm weather sites, or you just have to be on campus for football. But you've got a really busy schedule coming up. And while the meetings might sound mundane to many, they're very important to the ongoing operation of college athletics in general.
Yeah, that's right. It is a bit of a challenge because they don't schedule anything during football season in this industry, and then you sort of get it all in the next several months. I'm headed this week to the NCAA convention down in San Antonio. ACC meetings around the corner. I just came off the college football playoff meetings out in Arizona. So it's a busy time, but it's important for Notre Dame to participate and lead where it can.
And let's talk about the college football playoff. I thought the championship game was absolutely terrific. The semis weren't necessarily that great, but what everybody's talking about were the dramatic drop in ratings. The semis were down 33% because they were on New Year's Eve. And I know that is an issue that you anticipated, but you also know why there's a legitimacy to selecting that kind of a schedule.
Sure. We absolutely understood it. You know, the one thing we're sort of asking all our fans is, give this a little time. Let's see. Let's look after year four or five and see where we are, see if viewing patterns have changed at all. But we understood the issue. What we were fundamentally balancing, was trying to find that midpoint between going all in on the playoffs to the detriment of the traditional bowl system, or trying to find a balance point where you still protected some of that bowl tradition and built a vibrant postseason playoff. We may not have it exactly right, but that's what's going on here. It's let's keep those bowls on the days people knew it and work around them and see how that works. And I think that's so important not to lose sight of, because what we've seen in some of the other college sports is the postseason is so good and so vibrant that it's hurt the rest of the season. And we're trying to make sure that doesn't happen in football.
You played an integral role in the formation of this playoff. You're on the committee, as you just mentioned. So your day job, though, you want Notre Dame to be able to have a legitimate shot to get into the playoff after, now it's still in its toddler years, but from what you've seen so far, are you pleased? And do you believe that Notre Dame will get a spot if it deserves a spot?
Yes and yes. You know, we spent a lot of time on the issue when we were putting this together, and we considered a lot of different ways, but we kept coming back to the charge to the selection committee needs to be the four best teams. No limitations, whatever data you want to use, find the four best teams. If three of those teams are in one conference, pick them. You know, you find the four best. And as long as that's the context for the decision, we're going to be fine. You know, I think we recognize the challenge of not having that 13th game, but we'll be okay with that.
And it certainly produced a great championship game. We're out of time for this segment. We'll be back with our first guest, Molly Seidel, right after this timeout.
Notre Dame football is on WLS AM 890.
Our first guest is a senior from Heartland, Wisconsin. Molly Seidel recently became a two-time NCAA champion, as well as Notre Dame's first female to capture the NCAA cross-country championship and first overall since Oliver Hunter accomplished this feat way back in 1942. She also became Notre Dame's first individual national champion in the women's program history in the 10,000-meter event at the 2015 NCAA Outdoor Track and Field Championships last spring. And Molly, we thank you for stopping by to chat with us today.
Oh, thanks for having me.
You know, it's tough to get to be a two-time guest on this show, but when you win two national championships, it's, you know, what else could we possibly do? It's a great way to start the new semester to take a moment to reflect back on what was probably the singular most significant event in Notre Dame athletics last semester, which was you winning the cross-country championship. Congratulations.
Thanks so much.
Take us back there. Take us to race day, to your approach to it, and sort of go through the race with us a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was just about as good of a day as we could have asked for. The weather ended up being pretty mild. We avoided any of the big rain that was supposed to be coming. And just having the whole team there was such a big factor in it. It's, I don't know, it's one thing for NCAAs for track when I got to the line and you're at the national meet and you're nervous and there's so many people there. But having, I don't know, your six best friends there right on the line with you and knowing that they have your back is incredible. So being able to go into that race with that support and have so many people who weren't competing that day just from the team coming down to watch was a big factor as well. So it was a really special day.
Now, tactically, you went out pretty fast, right? I mean, mm-hmm. that was the game plan?
Yeah, there's a ton of girls in that race, and so it's kind of like surfing a tidal wave. So I wanted to just get right out to the front and try and hold that position. And so I stayed up there, stayed a little bit conservative the beginning part of the race, and then about halfway in, we started breaking away and started having some fun.
When did this all start? When did you first know that you wanted to competitively run?
Mm-hmm. Probably beginning right around in middle school. My school didn't have any track team or cross-country team, but I knew I was pretty good at running. We ran in gym class. I ended up breaking the school record for the mile in fifth grade, just doing the fitness challenge mile in gym class. And so after that, I kind of knew that I had a little bit of a talent for it and convinced my mom to let me go out for my church track team. And just from there, kind of kept going with it.
What's an average week for you in terms of, I guess everything's measured in meters now, but how many miles do you think you run a week? Mm-hmm.
Typically, I'm anywhere from about 75 to 95 miles a week, depending on the training or the meet schedule that week. And it's just usually two runs a day, and you just kind of get used to it. And I love being able to do the high mileage, and I'm blessed that my body can handle that pretty well. And so I know it just becomes a day-to-day thing. It's kind of like brushing your teeth. You don't have to think about doing it anymore. It's just something that you do every day.
In typical fashion for you, in discussing your national championship, you talked about the team and the importance to you of having them there. Mm-hmm. It's not automatic that your team is there. The team has to qualify to be at the finals. And then you talked about we broke away. The we included a teammate, right,
mm-hmm.
Who hung with you for a bit there, right, and had a high finish herself.
Yeah, Anna had a fantastic – or Anna Rohr, who's a national champion coming out of high school, and she's had a fantastic freshman season. She ended up placing sixth at Nationals just this past November. And so it was really cool being able to have her there right at that lead pack. And she actually went out and was very aggressive from the beginning. It was actually leading the race for maybe the first quarter of a mile. And being able to see her have such a spectacular first race at Nationals was really exciting. And seeing how she's going to progress over the next couple of years, I don't know, it really makes me excited to see where the team is going. And not just Anna, we had a number of freshmen on that Nationals team, and so it's going to be very exciting over the next couple of years.
Well, they propelled the team to a pretty good finish, right?
Yes, it was our highest finish in a number of years. I don't know the exact number, but we ended up placing eighth, and so being able to get top 10 at Nationals was very exciting. We were really, really pumped about that one.
One final question before we leave this remarkable achievement of yours. Mm-hmm. Strikes me there must have been a fundamental difference between your two championship races, mm-hmm. in that in the first one, notwithstanding a great performance at the ACC's, mm-hmm. You weren't the favorite coming mm-hmm. in. You know, there were others in that race that were expected to be the likely winners. Mm-hmm. This time you came in with a target on your back, right? I mean, everybody was focused on you. Did that create a different feeling for you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was definitely a different feeling coming in. It's one thing to come in as the unknown in track, and then over just the past summer and the season, having a lot more focus, it's definitely a different feeling to get used to. But I kind of avoided a good brunt of that attention. So there were two other runners, Allie Ostrander and Dominique Scott, who kind of got most of the focus, and I kind of flew under the radar for a good portion of the season. So I didn't have to deal with too much pressure from that respect. But it was pretty different going to the day before the race. I got the chance to go to the press conference and having people ask and whether they think I'm going to win or not. It's I don't know. It's kind of dealing with that pressure, but also having coaches and teammates to be able to alleviate a little bit of that helps.
Yeah, because Anne Aurora was from this area, everybody around here knew of her and had their fingers crossed that she would choose Notre Dame. She had a lot of great options. Talk about the relationship that you developed with her through that process and what role you think you might have played in her wanting to run for Notre Dame.
Yeah, I think we came from pretty similar standpoints. We both ended up winning Foot Locker Nationals our senior year, and she was probably the number one recruit coming out of high school. And so it's a lot of pressure for a 17, 18-year-old kid to go through. And so being able to have come from that similar standpoint and know a little bit about that process, I think, I don't know, being able to give her advice on that during the recruiting process, I think maybe helped a little bit with her decision. And but ultimately, we were all just so excited when she chose ND. And I think it kind of just speaks to the girls on the team and the academics and athletics that we have here that she ended up choosing to come here.
Now, her goals have to be similar to what you have already achieved. Mm-hmm. So how are you now helping her increase her performance so that she can follow literally in your footsteps?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's the same thing we do with all the freshmen. It's just being able to help give them advice and help them get through the stresses of the first year. It's an enormous change from high school to college. And so being able to help alleviate any of those pressures that we can, giving them advice and using our own mistakes as examples for what they shouldn't do, whether it's class schedules or training and stuff like that is helpful. So just trying to help them in any way that we possibly can, and that's going to make the team stronger as a whole.
The experience of our distance runners is a little bit different than our other student athletes here in that there isn't much of a season. You've got cross country.
there is a season, but it never ends.
You've got cross country, you've got indoor, you've got outdoor. And now I would guess you also have a national calendar to pay attention to beyond Notre Dame. So how do you sort of manage all of this? How do you protect your body, prepare yourself for this elite level of competition?
Yeah, it can be difficult because, like you said, there's no off season really, and there's always basically every weekend there's a meet that you could potentially go to. And so a lot of that is Coach Sparks being able to look at our schedule and plan out exactly what meets we're going to run and being able to work in periods of rest and recovery into that schedule so that we can have that longevity over the course of the year, because you need to peak a certain number of times for big races and get ready for those major events. You don't want to be racing every weekend. You don't want to be grinding yourself down too early in the season and then not be able to make it to May and June when those large races are. So a lot of that is just attributed to his smarts at planning it out and just to ourselves to be able to hold ourselves accountable and be patient and make sure that we're getting that recovery so that we have that longevity.
What are the sort of the big events on the horizon for you?
Mm-hmm. So we'll have a number of home meets here. ND's got one of the largest indoor tracks in the country, so everybody comes to us, basically. We've got a ND invite coming up in 2 weeks. I won't be racing, but we'll have a bunch of girls opening up in that race. We'll also have Mayo, which I will be opening up at, and after that, Alex Wilson to try and get a last chance qualifier for nationals. And then as well, we'll have ACCs out in Boston this year. And so that's going to be a major event. And hopefully, knock on wood, nationals in mid-March or so.
And you just mentioned facilities, and I think that's important. Obviously, this is a cold weather school, but for track facilities in the entire country, and they're getting better.
Exactly. We're actually going to be breaking ground this spring on a new outdoor track to kind of supplement our state-of-the-art indoor track that we also have, or our outdoor track stadium. Sorry about that. So it's going to be exciting to be able to have those new facilities. But yes, in terms of what we have here at ND, even though it can be cold and miserable outside, we're able to get in all the training that we need. We've got a 320-meter indoor track, which is bigger than just about anybody else has. And so it's fun being able to have all these large, notorious schools in track have to come to us.
Now, you talked about Coach Sparks. Can you talk a little about the relationship you've developed with him? You talked about how you sit down with him and plan when you should run so that you get the proper rest and can be at your best. But on a daily basis, what are your interactions like with him?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're seeing Sparks every day at practice. I'm probably up wasting more time in the office than I probably should. But just going there and being able to have open conversations with him about training, and it's always a back and forth. He definitely likes getting our input. We have our training logs online that he's always making sure that we're updating. But so he's getting the feedback from us on how the training is working, and so then he can better plan that out. And so it's great being able to have that two-way conversation rather than just him telling us how the workouts are going to be. And if you don't like it, then too bad. He's always willing to adjust and experiment. And I think the success of that shows throughout everyone's performances just this past cross country season and last year in track as well. So,
I know you don't want to look too far ahead, but I can't let you go without asking, are the Olympic trials a hope for this year? Or is it?
Definitely a hope and a dream for this year. That's going to be one of my major goals, to try and get that qualifier to go out there in early July. So, hopefully I'll be able to put together some good training and some good races to be able to get that. But it's definitely going to be a challenge. The U.S. is just absolutely loaded with talent, especially in the events that I'm hoping to go for, the 5K or the 10K. So it's going to be buckling down and just getting in that good, solid work to try and move from NCAA competition up that next step to the national scale.
Well, and thankfully, some of that talent is another ND, a former runner, another Molly, who's doing great. And I'd love to see both of you have great success this year and at the trials. Thank you so much for coming on and being with us. And I can't tell you how proud we are to have a two-time NCAA champion here at Notre Dame. Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Take my advice. Bet the Patriots, Packers, Panthers, and the Steelers. If I'm wrong, you can give me the hammer Monday morning. John Howell, WLS, AM 890.
Welcome back to this week's edition of the Jack Swarbrick Show. Our next guest is a man I spend a lot of time of, former Notre Dame basketball captain Torian Jones, who played 4 years for Mike Bray's squad. Three of those teams went to the NCAA tournament. His junior year, he helped the team get to the Sweet 16. He was a captain. His senior year, started all 31 games and averaged a career-high 8.4 points per game. And, Jack, I know we're delighted to have Torian coming on because he now serves another very important role for this athletic department.
He does, and that's where I want to start. We'll get to the basketball eventually in this. But you come back to Notre Dame in a different role in our academic services office. Tell our audience a little bit about what you do.
Thanks, Jack. I mean, I really love that role, and what was the biggest allure for me personally was that I know how much it helped me develop as a young man while here. Pat Holmes, who's now the director of the department, was my academic counselor, and he still worked with the men's basketball team. And, you know, I came in, I think, with a solid foundation academically, but he helped me think about it more bigger picture and seeing how I can really maximize my time here rather than just taking, you know, classes that, you know, were easy, that fit with basketball, and, you know, a lot of those same values and you know, principles that he instilled helped me to be successful after college. And, you know, now I'm just looking to pay it forward and be kind of another support tool there for the student athletes here who all come from great families who are obviously there to help them out for whatever they need. But having a person who went here, who's been through it, who performed on a high-profile sport, to kind of be able to talk them through some of the tough times is really important to be successful here.
Give us a sense of the day in the life. I mean, who you work with, how you meet with them, how does the whole dynamic work?
Well, I work with the women's side of swimming and diving specifically, and then also the track and field and cross country programs all together. And you know, from our office's perspective, we work with students throughout their entire career, obviously, but our main focus is that freshman class, maybe even spilling into the sophomore year a little bit, and what we like to call the transition program, which is just helping them to acclimate to the changes from the expectations and what it takes to be successful as a high school student versus what it takes to be successful as a college student, especially at a school like Notre Dame, which is very challenging across the board, both athletically and academically. And We try to approach from a lot of different ways and try to be somewhat flexible with how we approach it. But the main keys are early on having weekly meetings with our freshmen, student athletes, just to, you know, be in the know and just, you know, to build a rapport, to build a comfort level with them, to be able to come to us and trust us, to let them know when they're struggling. You know, we have just as high achieving athletes we have on their respective sports, they come in with that same determination to be successful academically. So it's not very easy to come in when you're used to just kind of hitting things out the park academically right off the bat, and now you're seeing the first signs of struggle. So building that trust is important, and it starts with those weekly meetings. In addition to that, we have a structured study program that we have implemented where they come in the evenings on Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday evening for the respective sports that I work with. And we just try to provide them with resources at their disposal, whether it be tutors, writing centers, specialists, you know, study groups and things like that. And just kind of try to wear a lot of different hats and be a one-stop shop for them. Not so much to do everything for them or tell them how to do it, but just to expose them to the resources that they have there and make sure they're maximizing those opportunities.
I know it's also important for you to develop relationships with the coaching staff. So you also work a little bit with the football program, and Pat Holmes took you to the Fiesta Bowl as part of the academic advisory services team that was there. And part of the reason for that was not just to be there with players, but there is some downtime at every bowl game, and you were able to interact a little bit with the coaches who during the season are so busy and help try to develop those relationships.
Yeah, that's exactly right, Jack. And it was a great experience across the board. I mean, I'm somewhat spoiled to be able to go out there and hang out in a very unofficial capacity. But as you said, during the year, we have the study hall for the football group over in the Gould Complex. And while we cross paths with coaches here and there, we don't really get to have a chance to really talk to them. If anything, we're always coming to them to bother them about, you know, reinforcing certain things, you know, grabbing certain guys and making sure they're doing the right things academically with travel and things of that nature. But in our opportunity to go out there and see them at the Fiesta Bowl in the downtime, talking to some of the GAs and the head coaches and assistants and position coaches, it was really cool to see them, you know, with their hair down, so to speak. And, you know, though the bowl game didn't go as we would have liked, they were really good about and the post-game get-together that they had at the hotel, really interacting and, you know, and enjoying the overall season and you know, acknowledging the hard work and what it took to be successful there across the board, not just on the field, but also the hard work that their students did in the classroom and being able to balance both of those heavy obligations.
Well, Jack, I know he proudly now wears his Fiesta Bowl Under Armour pullover on all of the basketball trips now, the team meals.
That's where I was going to go next because, you know, we've got you doing so many things. The other thing you have to do is carry our radio broadcast on basketball, right?
You know,
you got to make that work. Have you had experience doing that before you came here?
I never had, actually, Jack, and that was the interesting thing about it was that, you know, I've been able to be around the game in multiple capacities, obviously as a player in college and somewhat in the professional, semi-professional level. But then when I was back home, I coached at a high school and then also as associate head coach at a D3 college and then skill work and training. So just from a knowledge perspective, it helped prepare me coming in for that part of it. But I couldn't be prepared for what it took to, you know, what it takes to be good on air. And, you know, Jack's been great with just bringing me along and really cueing me up and making it easy for me to be successful there in that regard. He talks to me a lot, gives me great constructive criticism, and, you know, and just challenges me. You know, he's very positive at all times, but he makes sure to let me know when there's ways I can grow in that regard. And with me not having experience there, that was critical to me being able to hit the ground running. And, you know, my success early on in there, I have to attribute a lot to Jack's tutelage, if you will, there, and, you know, being patient with me as I grew in that regard.
Not everybody gets to work with an Emmy winner.
exactly.
But he's been great from day one, and like most Notre Dame student athletes, he's a great communicator, but he also learns very, very quickly. And the toughest thing, I think, for a lot of analysts on radio, especially a beginner, is radio is a play-by-play medium. You're painting a picture, and the play-by-play guy just has to talk more. So you have to get in and out of your points very, very quickly, and he's done that very, very well, as opposed to TV, which is more an analyst medium. And last week, I got the honor of doing one of the women's games in ESPN3 with Ruth Riley. And in that game, I'm trying to draw out Ruth. That's more a platform for the analyst to explain where on radio it's more painting the picture, but with a good analyst painting the picture and jumping in to explain the why without missing anything that happens, because most of the people, we like to think that some people turn down the sound on the TV, but most of the people are not watching. They don't have the visual picture, and you have to paint that for them. And I really try to make sure that if somebody scratches their head, I try to let you know that. But he has been able to fit in so well, and he really identifies it is great to have all the analysts do a great job. We're honored to still have LaFonso Ellis on occasion. But having guys who were captains and so intertwined with this coaching staff, and particularly Coach Bray, is really helpful. I'll just say, Torian, you're not in that huddle, but you've been in huddles like this. What is Coach saying? And more often than not, we'll find out in postgame that what he said he thought Coach was saying is exactly what Coach said.
I thought LaFonso was too big time for us anymore. I see him on ESPN all the time.
He does 2-4. He does 2-4.
Torian, I gotta ask you in this context, who do you identify as the best analyst? When you're watching basketball at home, who's the guy you think, that's who I ought to look to?
You know what's funny? After I graduated, I was really big into NBA. It was kind of where I was aspiring to be, to play myself. So I watched a lot of them there. And one of the greatest, I think the best guy that's doing it at the NBA level is Hubie Brown. I mean, he really makes me feel like I'm getting like a teaching session. And that's what I like to bring as an analyst myself, is being able to explain and break down some of the things, as opposed to just, oh, nice crossover, good left-hand layup, and understanding how he set the play up, the communication levels there. And Hubie Brown is second to none in that regard to me, and how he's able to articulate that and really help you to really understand to a higher and deeper level as a casual fan, even someone that didn't really play at a high level. But then also, you got to love the guys like Mark Jackson and Jeff Van Gundy, their cadence and how they work well off each other and, you know, go back and forth and their banter.
Sometimes those guys know there's a game going on. Usually they're so busy just engaging each other.
Exactly.
They're oblivious to the game.
Exactly right. Exactly.
Are there any college guys that jump out at you? And obviously you're watching more NBA right now than college, and you're from an NBA town, so that makes a lot of sense.
Sure. Oh, yeah. I mean, I love Dan Dockage. Is that, did I say his last name correctly? He's a really good one, very brutally honest at times, sometimes, and critical, and I just love his perspective on things. And Jay Billis is obviously, his reputation precedes him. I don't have to really say much about him, but I just really, from my perspective, the coaches seem to have the most interesting perspective, because again, from a player, you can kind of talk about it from how you experienced it there, but as a coach, a lot of those guys are former players and coaches. So again, I feel like the more perspectives you can bring to the game, the better you are as an analyst. And Dan Dockage is great with that. Doris Burke is great with that. As I said, Jay Billis. And I mean, it's so many different guys I can kind of point to. LaFonso obviously just brings that calm, cool demeanor that you like to hear, and it makes you feel like you're not getting screamed at. You know, Dick Vitale is great at it, but sometimes, man, you got to kind of, go take a nap after watching the Dick Vitale game every once in a while. He's so animated.
Well, he's a great promoter, and he has your shtick, and he admits it, and it's made him a very wealthy man, and he makes the event bigger. But all the folks that you mentioned got where they are because of how hard they prepare to do it. Dockage just started back in 2010. I remember that's the first time it was in the Old Spice and we won it. And he looked at me because I knew him from his IU days. I actually interviewed him when he was a player, and he goes, I have no idea what I'm doing. All I said was, yeah, but you have the knowledge and you talk well. Don't worry about it. You're doing fine.
Exactly.
And now he's a talk show host too. But the key is they all work hard, as you do, to get ready. And I tell you what, this coaching staff really helps all of us do our jobs. They give us access to the scouting reports. We get to go to practice. And you have to do that so that you can explain what's going on. Because a lot of times, something may happen. If you haven't been at practice, you don't know what was supposed to happen.
Exactly.
So you might analyze it in a different way. Knowing what the team was prepared to do helps you explain what's going on during a game.
100%. I'm sorry, Jack. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, as we let you go here, because we're getting short on time this segment, give us your analysis of the team at this point in the season, what you see and what has to happen for the road ahead.
I'm still really excited about the team. I mean, they've run into a couple roadblocks, but that's just a testament to how great the ACC is. You know, early on, kind of running into a buzzsaw down in Virginia and being pushed to the limit here at home against Pittsburgh, where we fell a little bit short. But I think it was expected. Coach Bray talked about it early in the year, where we have a lot of guys stepping into new roles. And though Demetrius Jackson played an integral role last year, Zach August, it's different doing that and then being a leader as well. And I think what we're missing most right now is the leadership that both Pat Connaughton and Jaren Grant brought. So as guys continue to get comfortable in those roles, with Steve Astoria most recently being named the additional captain on the team, I think we'll see growth in that regard, because it's an approach, I think, that those guys brought in different dynamics. Pat was a fiery, you know, competitor that just brought a natural toughness and set the bar very high, where as a complimentary player, you had no choice but to go hard and really battle right from the beginning with a 6'5 perimeter player battling with big men. And then Jaren's calmness under fire. I mean, he was a guy that was never high or low. And I think at the end of games, when the heightened, you know, intensity would get to most people, he was just so unflappable. And I think it was contagious amongst the other guys. So that's what allows you to be able to beat a Pittsburgh late in the game like that, or to go into a hostile Virginia crowd environment and be able to win out there. And, you know, missing those guys is critical. But I think guys like Demetrius and Zach and Steve will be able to step up as we move forward and continue to grow and get more comfortable and lead in that way as well.
Well, I'm sure they will. And got a history of great leadership, including the leadership you provided when you were a captain here. We're thrilled to have you back on campus continuing to help us. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Jack.
Irish fans, make sure you download the official WatchND mobile app, available on iOS and Android devices. The WatchND mobile app is the best way to experience great Fighting Irish digital media, video, and audio content right on your tablet or smartphone. You'll get full access to our entire video on demand library, live game and event broadcasts, live shows and press conferences, live game stats, and more. And best of all, it's free. Search for WatchND in the iTunes Store or Android Play to download the WatchND mobile app today.
The Fighting Irish play here.
WLS.
EM 890.
About 20 seconds left in our show, so the bullet point closed.
Well, thanks for being
with me
today and taking on the additional role. You were an able substitute
for
Mr. Schmidt. It's a busy weekend. Hope Irish fans enjoy it with a trip to Duke for our men's basketball team, which is always fun. So hope a good weekend ahead, and go Irish.
This has been the Jack Swarbrick Show, brought to you by Team Notre Dame partners Sprint, Coke Zero, Under Armour, Gatorade, and is also sponsored by Xfinity. Listen this time every week for everything Notre Dame athletics. The Jack Swarbrick Show on your home for Notre Dame football, 89 WLS.
Get everything you need to bring home the holidays on Black Friday at Menards. Doors open 6 a.m. A Nerf Blaster Dog Toy Blast Tennis Ball 75 feet. Fun for you and your pup. Just $15.99. Delicious Dubai Chocolate is $12.99 a bag. Color-changing Squish Lamps and Performax Drill Bit Sets are only $4.99 each. Menards has great Black Friday gifts for everyone in your family. Doors open 6 a.m. on Black Friday. Good through November 30th. See Menards.com for details.
Warm season's greetings to you all.